It's the motherfucking Millennial Nigga Podcast.
Welcome back to the Millennial Miha Podcast. I'm Millennial Miha, and I am so excited to be here on the UCLA Compass with my friend, my beautiful friend, Tiffany Nguyen. She's an artist. She is a creator. She is a muralist. She is a bad bitch on all fours. She's my friend, and I'm just excited to interview her. So I like to ask all my guests to, I'm having a lot of typos here. I like to ask all my guests to talk about themselves or introduce themselves using an object. Can you tell us what your object is and why you chose it?
My object is my journal / diary. It's a light pink journal diary that I think I started using when I was living in San Jose. So once I graduated UC Davis, I moved to San Jose to teach full-time, fourth grade. And I want to say that's the first time I started writing in it, because I remember teaching full time was hella stressful for me. Yeah. And I remember looking back, I wish I had it right now on me. I remember writing in it just to decompress my days.
They were literally, like 12-hour days.
Yes,
right?
Literally, I was probably working like, no lie, probably 65 hours a week, like with including lesson planning and shit. That's why it was like probably the most stressful time in my life, like period.
Yeah.
Fuck rocket ship, by the way. Oppressive ass school system. But yeah, so I think I used that to decompress. And I remember when I had like a good day with a student, I would just find that as an opportunity to finally write about something I'm grateful for. So it was really hard during that time, and because I was like living away from people, I didn't really fuck with San Jose, the energy wasn't my favorite. But yeah, so that journal, in which I think I didn't consistently write in it, but I remember picking it back up probably a few months after I stopped working there, and I would write about it in my new job that I had as a site director for another nonprofit. And then I started writing in it more frequently when I think I moved back to LA. I think I tried to... I used to only use the journal as, like, to reflect on what I was going through, you know? But then I started using it to create, like, goal lists or, like, manifestation lists. So then I think I really... Because I used my notes sometimes, my phone, but then I was like, fuck, like, I need something more tangible. So I started using it to write, like, my manifestation list or, like, my 2019 goals, etc. But, yeah, and then... while I was traveling right now in different states or cities in the U.S., I would use that a lot too, just to check in with myself if I felt triggered by anything or anyone, or just to check in. Oh, also, yeah, then it became a fucking tool for me to write down my ideas. I think we talked about this before, about like writing down any ideas we have, and I used to just write it down in my notes in my phone, but something about that not being tangible again, I didn't really fuck with. So then I started writing it in my journal. So just any ideas. So right now, what first comes to mind is that I have a series of paintings in mind. So whenever I get an idea, I just write it down. I add it to the list. Number 12, my next painting is going to be of me on my dad's back, for example. And then I try to tell myself, oh, well, it's okay if you don't like that idea anymore. And I just cross it out. Same with goals, you know. But yeah, so I think that is something that I really can't picture my life without now. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could, like, even teach others how to have a notebook for, like, manifesting things or just writing down goals and reflection and et cetera, because I feel like it's been really useful, especially since I can't afford therapy anymore right now. Mm-hmm. So I really use that a lot. And I should probably write. But I left it in my suitcase. Wait, where did I leave it? Oh, yeah, it's in my suitcase. Okay. But yeah, that's my object.
That's dope, Tiff. Like, I love how you're always so... You've always been a person who's very self-aware and self-reflective. And that's something that I've always been able to connect with about you, is that you're always willing to have these conversations that are, like... you're just always willing to go deep. And then even if you just make jokes to protect yourself. Which is something you definitely do. But I love how we're always able to connect, like, about artistry. And, yeah, something I wanted to talk to you about is, you know, your art is very women empowering. You know, it's like there's in all of your art, there's an element of women empowerment, or this element of independence. Like, you always depict women in very, like, fierce kind of, I don't know, the colors. I want you to talk a little bit about how you would define your style. Like, this, like, she's actually sitting here next to me drawing right now. And one of the things that I love so much about your work is how you use the use of neon colors. That's, like, my favorite shits ever. So I just want you to talk a little bit about, you know, why you choose to focus so much on drawing women and what kind of comes from that.
Yeah, let me see. I think first and foremost, like, one of the main reasons why I draw women so much is that because I constantly, like, find so many women as my muses. I don't know if that was supposed to be plural. Sorry. I think I just fuck with really, like, being a woman too. I think so many, like, things that I think about have to do with womanhood. And I also, now I realize, oh wow, like, to use my art in a more relatable way, in the sense of, like, how women can relate to it, is by creating things that relate to women. So, for example, the first thing that comes to mind is the drawing I did of the woman sitting on a stack of books with the different titles. The top book says Why Men Go to Hell. The second one says Stop Settling. The third book says Daddy Issues. And the fourth book says How to Make Women Orgasm. And the last book says Unapologetic Art. And I remember I was in Oakland when I drew this at my friend Divya's house, and I was just sitting down, and I think I was staring at her bookshelf or something. Or actually, no, I don't know what I was doing. My creativity was very, like, was hella flowing out there. So I think I just started drawing the woman first, not on anything. And then I started drawing books. I like drawing shapes a lot sometimes. And then I'm like, okay, how can I make this more, like, contextual? And then I always think about, like, what I'm going through, what my current thoughts are. So, for example, Why Men Go to Hell. I think I have a lot of anger towards men a lot. and so I think art is really, like, how I channel that anger too, is like process. And process it. Even though sometimes I think I still hold myself back because I'm like, fuck, this person's gonna know it's about them, or fuck, this person's gonna be offended. But then that's why I think I also included a book title called Unapologetic Art, because I'm like, Tiff, like, bro, if this is how you vent and you cope with everything going on in your mind, like, you have to be more unapologetic. So yeah, I think creating artwork with women just really, like, helps me deal with shit that I'm going through. And I think, like, I remember I always tell people, like, oh, I hate drawing men. I like drawing men, like, if they're cute or, like, stylish or fashionable or if I'm in love. But I think women are just so, like, beautiful to me, and multifaceted and complex and powerful. Like, just drawing our features, I feel like there's power in that. So yeah, I think actually too, I just realized, because sometimes I always struggle with when people ask, what's your style, or what do you paint? I'm always like, well, I draw, like, I don't know, I can't explain it, I'll show you. But now I'm realizing and starting to own, like, okay, I draw a lot of women. I love painting women, whatever that means. Some days it might just be like a woman's face. Other days it might be more political or more complex. But I think for the most part, just drawing women, I think, does something to me. And I think why I do it too, I think it's weird in some way, when I create art, it makes me not want to shop in a way, or makes me, like, more content with whatever I have in life currently, because I think like I love, like, fashion, you know, or I love cool shit, and I love, like, cool ass women, like, especially with Instagram, you know, you see so many dope ass women in terms of, like, what they wear, just what they do and shit. So I think whenever I paint them, like, it makes me feel like, say if I, like, want to embody what another woman has, it makes me feel, like, closer to that person, or I don't know. I don't think I said that correctly.
No, but I think you did. I think I want to ask also, because there is this, you know, you mentioned that you love cool shit and you love fashion, and, like, there's this reoccurring theme of you using, like right here in this, it says material shit. And then you also have a Louis Vuitton purse that you painted, you know. No, yeah, but whatever. The point is like...
It's funny. I have a funny story about that.
Well, I want you to tell it. I want you to tell me what this... The whole concept of material shit and why it keeps reoccurring in your art.
I think partially because of that is I studied sociology in college, and I think, well, I entered college as an art studio major at UC Davis, but then I switched my major to sociology after I took my intro to social class, and we were learning about capitalism and learned about Marx and shit. So I think, like, capitalism is also heavy on my mind a lot, and materialism, obviously. Oh, my God. Let me tell you really quick. So tell me why. So I was staying at my friend's house in Orange County, and this is what I mean about materialism. I think I'm just like, it's so funny how material shit can rule people's minds and worlds without them ever thinking critically about shit. Because I walked into some store that carries like Off-White,
all that hype shit,
Gucci, like hella shit, but dope ass clothes. You know, I walked in for inspiration for my art. I walk in, they're like, oh, is this your first time here? And I lie and say, no, it's not. Because I'm like, okay, now leave me the fuck alone. I just don't want to talk to anyone. But I can see how they look at me up and down. Like, they're looking at my shoes. I came in wearing, like, my neon, like, soccer shorts with my fucking Herschel Supply backpack and, like, an oversized sweater. So I was like, it's so crazy, though. I'm like, how people, like, I just started overthinking. Well, first, the setup of the store is very inaccessible in the sense of, like, it makes you feel like you don't want to mess anything up. And so I just overthink. I always not overthink, but I always think it's so funny. I used to say designer shit is corny, even though some of it's dope. It's because, like, motherfuckers will literally, like, revolve their whole life around designer shit. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I think that brought me back to what you were saying about the materialism on the fake Louis bag that I painted on. And I positioned it next to a Karl Marx book, and it went over some people's heads. But then, so Hype Bae, the women version of Hype Beast, featured that bag the other day. And then they took it off, though, after there were so many comments, because people said, I can't believe you would post a fake Louis Vuitton bag on your Instagram page. And I wrote, LOL, like,
you totally missed the point.
Yeah, they missed the fuck out of the point. But I'm like, wow, that's so crazy. And some people were like, well, it's art, blah blah. But I'm like,
wait, how did they even know that it was fake?
Someone just commented on it. Like, there was just so much controversy, so I think they just like, oh, I'd rather just delete the picture because we don't want to have a bad rep for posting fake designer shit. And I understand, trust me, as an artist, I understand if someone copies something, having a fake designer brand. But when shit's that inaccessible, I feel like, oh, just there's layers to that of even people making and being in the alleys in downtown LA and there being fake purses, there it's for a reason. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But I think it's just funny because I'm just like, I laugh at people like that who can't think critically enough to think that the fact that, first of all, I made that, I put it next to a Karl Marx book and it went over the girl's head like, hello, well, I can't believe it's a fake bag. Like, this is dumb.
And, you know, in the Karl Marx, like, that whole philosophy he has is, like, he's the one that came up with the concept of, like, the haves versus the have-nots, right? And that's kind of, like, what, is he not? I don't know what that means. Okay, well, that was something that I believe I learned in philosophy. Well, yeah. Was, like, him talking about capitalism and, like, communism, but versus, the haves versus the have-nots and the people that...
Proletariat.
Yeah. So, it's, like, there's this whole conversation that's happening in the picture that they deleted.
Yeah.
And also, like, surrounding but they turned it into something negative, which is so interesting because it's like, wow, you really fucking missed the point.
But that's why I laugh, because I'm like, fuck, man. Like, that's why, like, when I was in that designer store, whatever, like, and I went to another one after two to look at shoes, and I'm just like, bruh, like, when someone shows you money, y'all would act different. But it's funny as fuck because I'm like, you guys are so
brainwashed.
As you're working in this fucking store, bitch, you're not balling if you're working inside this store. So check yourself, number one. Number two, and that was probably elitist for me to say, who cares if you're working there? But don't, like, come try to judge other people. I just think it's so funny. I always think it's funny. Hilarious. Don't get me wrong, yeah, sometimes I look at people if I feel like their outfit's ugly, but not because of the brands, just because I'm like, I never say anything.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I think what I also wanted to ask you about was, like, the journey from, you know, just being a person who is a creator, that, like, an artist who literally just, like, creates in your sketchbook, to going to becoming a muralist. How did that process happen? And tell me about your first mural. I know I got to see it live. I got to see you doing it live at Mir High School. And I want to talk about why you chose the words that you chose in that mural, and why it's important to for youth to see that every day. Can you tell us about it?
I think painting murals has always been, like, one of my dreams. Mm-hmm. I think just living in LA and driving around and seeing so many murals. And I think too, I always think about how women are always so intimidated by big things, you know, like big buildings. Like, we feel like we have to work with small things. Yeah, this mural, I think I just reached out to the principal, who was my former principal when I was in middle school, and I was working as the art studio coordinator at the time for a nonprofit that was located at John Muir. And I was like, hey, I want to lead this project with the students to create a mural on campus. There's no student organized or led mural. So I kind of just grouped up a bunch of students who wanted to be involved. They sat down, kind of wrote down different concepts. They told me their concept, I told them mine, and then we kind of connected the two, but yeah, so I think the words that I chose for it, or was that your question?
Yeah,
the
words? Why did you choose these words? Because these are affirmations,
yeah,
correct?
Yes, so I intentionally chose affirmations, which is so fucking funny, because while I was painting it, all of these things, like, I wasn't thinking of myself, you know, like, to affirm myself.
You were struggling with those things.
I was struggling with those things. So the first one, it says, the first affirmation is, you are enough. And I think that's something that I told myself I wanted to get tatted before, because I'm just like, damn, like, you are enough. Like, we always think we need something else of us or in us, relationship-wise, friendship-wise, just something, like, when we think, like for us to be loved or liked, like, there needs to be another thing of us. We need to lose weight. We need to do the X, Y, Z. But it's like, bitch, you are enough as you are already right now. And I remember my therapist even told me that. You are enough. She told me before, like, I hope you know, like, even if you weren't going to therapy, you're already enough. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think just having students, even though some of my students, I remember they're like, I don't get it. You're enough. Like, who wants to be enough? And I'm like, so I had to teach them through it. But I think what I like about quotes is that while they may not resonate with someone in the moment, years later, they'll think about that and reflect on it. And finally, a light will switch off and you'll think, oh, shit. Because I still remember when I was in elementary school and the quote that was in our cafeteria said, our greatest option is our option to choose, or something weird. And I remember I didn't get it when I was in elementary school, but then as I'm older now, I'm like, wow, it was about agency, even though obviously we can go on about that and how real that is. But so yeah, so then the next affirmation is, you are loved. I just think, like, we forget that we are loved by so many people, even if it's just one person, friends, family, etc. You're resilient. I feel like in high school especially, a lot of students go through shit and it's often overlooked. I remember I went through so much in high school and no one ever, like, asked me. Teachers never asked me why I missed more school than attended school. So I think students, I just want them to know that they're strong and resilient. And even, you know, they might not even know what that word means exactly. Then they learn it from fucking Googling. What does this mean? Or they hear it. When you see more words that you're familiar with, you learn. And then you matter. I think just as simple as that. I think seeing stuff like this can really even save a life. I remember a good friend in elementary school reached out to me after I posted this mural saying how it, like, saved her life in a way. And I really appreciated that because I never even thought, like, how powerful the words could be. But I think my intention with this is that when students can see this sitting through one of their classrooms. So I wanted them to look out on it, you know, and just remember and walk by and remember it. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's so powerful. And I remember, like, coming to see you while you were finishing this mural and just looking at it and being in so much awe of how, like, important it is, because we just don't have these reminders. Like, Muir is primarily a Black and Brown campus, and, you know, we grew up in this city, Pasadena, and it's on the side of Pasadena that's perceived to just be like ghetto or hood, or just, like, you know, the resources are not there. And so just for you to choose that to be the campus that you put these words, I just thought that was so powerful and so indicative of you as a person, because I feel like you make an effort, a real effort, to center women of color in your art, you know. And like the most recent mural that you did in Nashville, you know, this, can you tell us about this and why you chose these specific women to paint and why?
So actually, that's funny that you brought that up. So I think as I was, like, traveling in the U.S., my intention was, I went with the intention to go to different states to, number one, like, connect with other artists, and number two, just, like, learn more, navigate the art world a little more, focus on my art shit. So I was walking by the street, I think I was going to thrift stores and taking pictures. My friend Jackie, I was staying with her, college friend. Shout out to Jackie, ride or die through the whole fucking mural process. So I hella appreciate her for that. But so I think we were walking by, and I don't know if she pointed out or some one of us said, I think I said like, oh, this is a dope, like a nice ass wall, and I think she said you should reach out to them. And I was like, nah, you know. But then I'm like, Then I look and I see that it's the Global Education Center. I'm like, wow, this is the first community center I've seen since traveling. So I just felt like connected to it. And then so it says open, but then it's closed. The door's locked. So then I emailed the director. I stalked her because I always do that. Then I'm like, okay, she sounds dope as fuck. So then I emailed her and said, hi, like, I noticed your wall. I have a mural envisioned, but I really didn't. Hopefully Ellen doesn't listen to this and hear how I finessed her. But I didn't have anything envisioned yet. But I had something envisioned, but it was just not
you conceptual. Had the vision of the there, vision being, art
of there being art there. Yes.
Yeah.
And then, so then when she wrote back and said, I would absolutely love for you to paint something on any of our walls, I was like, oh my God, like, I've reached out to some people before and never heard anything back. So when she wrote back, I was like, yes, like, oh my God. And then I started overthinking, like, fuck, what about budget? What about supplies? Like, I don't have money to buy budget supplies. And then I meet with her the next day, and I almost didn't meet with her the next day because I'm like, start doubting myself. Like, whatever, it's not going to fall through. She's not going to have budget money for the supplies. Like, why am I doing this, you know? And then I go, and she's like, oh yeah, we have a Home Depot card through our, like, organization. You can use that. And I was like, wow, like, what? So then, yeah, and then I was like, fuck. Well, actually, rewind. So then she's like, can you just send me the concept, though? Because I needed to let our board members know. And then I was like, shit, I don't really have a concept. But because of all these doodles I've been doing of different women and men and people in general who have asked for one, I think it kind of inspired me. I got an aha moment, like, oh, shit, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to paint something in a similar style as those doodles that I've been doing because I really enjoy doing that style. And I'm going to paint all women. So I actually have, the picture of the concept I created first. And it was just, like, I had the wall and I photoshopped the images of different doodles of that I've already done of women onto the wall. Mm-hmm. But I knew those weren't going to be the same faces. I wanted to make sure that the faces were representative of the Global Education Center, which is mostly Muslim women, Indian women, black women, and other women of different ethnicities. But for the most part, I just wanted to, I think, because in Nashville, Tennessee, there's a lot of murals. A lot of people don't know that Nashville is known for a lot of its murals. There's even a Nashville mural tour, which they stopped by while I was painting, which was really cool. Yeah, and the woman commissioned this doodle of her two sons from me, who started that. But basically what I was saying was that I wanted to paint women because, number one, I feel like, actually, there's so many fucking reasons. So back up. So number one, because I like drawing women. I always feel like women's faces are powerful, and however you interpret it, by working at a woman's face. But yeah, what am I saying? I don't know. Sorry, am I talking too much?
No, you're fine. So what else I wanted to talk to you about is, like, so in this mural, can you describe why, like, so it's like, what color would you call this? The background.
Brick. It's brick.
Oh, so it's just brick? That's not paint?
Oh, they did paint it. They painted it like red brick color.
Yeah, it's like a red brick color. And then why did you choose for the women to be in black and white and not color them in?
Well, initially I planned to use pops of color. Ran out of time, though. But I did use pops of color in their earrings. So, but then I was like, fuck. Like, I usually color in the hair, you know, and stuff. But then I have an app where I, like, scale stuff. And then I can, like, do, you know, I use the little tool on an iPhone where you can just draw it in. And I was like, I don't like it colored in. And I like the black and white on top of the brick color. So, yeah, I think because it's like I'm depicting women of color, and you can tell that they're women of color even by without seeing the color of their skin through their features.
Yeah.
And I think it's really powerful because then I feel like more people can relate to the women while looking at the women's faces. You don't know if they're Asian. You don't know if they're black. You don't know if they're Latinx. You don't know what they are. But you know they're women of color because of their features.
Yeah.
So I thought it was really interesting. Actually, I had so many comments while painting this from the bar across street because it's a bunch of white men. They're like, oh, are you going to paint any white women? Or they asked
Shut
me if the two...
They asked you that?
Yes. And they asked me if the two women on the left, are those the two congresswomen, the ones that endorse Bernie?
Holy shit.
And I said, oh, well, it's up for your interpretation.
So what do you hope that this mural... like, what emotion do you want people to have when they walk by it?
Any emotion. I think any emotion. I don't think I have one. I think I remember a woman too was like, why aren't any of them smiling? And I was like, because women aren't always happy, or because why the fuck do they need to be smiling, period. Yeah. But I was like, I think I just want people to feel something. I think whatever that may be, if they think of their sister, if they think of themselves, if they are inspired to go do a mural themselves, if they are, I don't know, like anything. Like I think that's one thing I've learned, is that I can't really pick and choose what I want people to feel, but as long as they're feeling something, period. Like in any way, I think that's powerful.
Yeah, I think that's dope, Tiff. I'm so proud of you. Like every time you post something, it's like,
yeah, that was my biggest mural.
How big is it?
15 feet high by 60 feet wide.
Wow.
So yeah, 2 weeks nonstop. Well, I stopped because of the rain for 3 days, but I was so tired, and I think that was actually like testament to myself, that sometimes I tell myself like, you can't work that hard for anything, because I'm just like, I get really exhausted. But I think I with art, you know, it's so easy to for me to keep going because I love seeing the outcome.
Yeah. How did, so I want to know, like, well, let's pause because I have a gift, and I want to, like, the conversation's like going really deeply into your art. No, it's not food, bitch. But I have something that I want to give you. And I always like to give gifts because that's just like my love language. You know, like every time. Stop interrupting me. So every time you come over, I always give you stuff. That's just part of who I am, because I have too much shit. But I wanted to give you this because I know you need.
Wait, you are so sweet.
That's why, and I saw this in your bag, and I was like, Claire's so cute. Even what it says is cute.
I know.
Can you describe what it is?
It's a teal, kind of like a pastel teal color. What are these called?
Water bottle,
canteen plastic ones. Yeah, because I've been drinking out of
big ass
gallons, and people are always like, that's cancerous, and I'm like, I know, I'll get one soon. And then she got me this dope ass Euphoria HBO pencil/makeup bag. I'll use it for pencils and shit, not makeup. But wow, I'm so happy you gave me this, because I use this one, but I can always use more. And then she gave me, yay, Miha Making Move sticker, two of them, which I'm going to put on my laptop literally right now. I'm so happy you gave me this. I can't wait to buy a shirt, by the way. I want to buy like a big one.
Yeah, I know, that's what I'm making
one.
But yeah, I brought you this stuff because, so I went to the Vogue Summit over the...
Oh yeah, why were you there? I asked you why you were there, and you never fucking responded, bitch.
I know, because I'm a bitch. Because I knew that would be something good to talk about on the podcast. So I was like, I'm just going to be continued that. Uh-huh. But, oh, you're putting it on your laptop. See, like, I definitely need to get better quality stickers, but this is a good start, right?
Yes, where'd you get them through?
I got them, shout out, Chopped Up Cherries, my homegirl Desiree. Like, I met her through another artist friend of mine named Ana Alvarado, and she hooked it up. So that was how I've gotten my shirts and my merch made so far. And she gives like great prices, and she's just like really supportive and just a dope human being. So yeah, shout out Desiree, Chopped Up Cherries on Instagram. If y'all need any embroidery or anything like that, hit her up. Yeah, I keep bags in my car, gift bags, because I always am giving gifts to people. And I just wanted to like show, because I know you need, I like to give people stuff I know they need. And plus I knew you love Euphoria. Why do you like that show?
Oh my god, I think I've texted this to multiple people, but because it's really good at capturing the nuances between interactions and relationships, like, you know, like overthinking, for example. In shows, when we watch shows, we don't see that people are overthinking, or we don't see that people are nervous or have anxiety. And I think that's so important to show, because it's real, you know.
Yeah. So let's talk about you deciding to go off and live the artist life. Tell me a little bit about how you made that decision. You know, you did mention that when you were teaching, it was like one of the most stressful times in your life. Like, you know, that was back in San Jose. But just in general, you know, some things happened with your teaching situation here. And then you made the decision consciously to, you know, go off and travel and just create art. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
I think it all comes down to me always. Well, I think I'm obviously fearful at times, and at times more fearless. But I think I always ask remind myself, like, damn, like, we really only live in these bodies once that we're currently in. And it's like, do I want to live like a boring ass life the rest of my life, or do I want to do what I really want to do? And I think, what was your question? Why, like, how has it been? Well, how did I transition? So I was working as a co-teacher in Altadena, at a small charter school. I felt fulfilled in a way. I love working with youth in general, but then I still felt like exhausted, depressed in a way. I wasn't very excited to wake up every day, put on clothes that I didn't really love because I felt like I couldn't wear exactly what I wanted to wear. And I think that's big to me. I think being an artist is one of the things that only allows me to wear exactly what I want to wear. So while painting a mural, for example, I could literally be wearing sweats in an oversized sweatshirt without a bra. Like, and that's so big to me, comfort, because I can't function without feeling good in what I look like. Not even necessarily good, because I don't look good when painting, but I feel good about myself because I feel like my true self.
Yeah, like so, being authentic.
Yes, being authentic. But yeah, so I think I kind of transitioned into like focusing on art more, and I think I'm still navigating it, obviously, still struggling, and still finding like how to make it work. But I think one thing I keep reminding myself is that it's impossible to not get to where you want to be if you keep on working. And I understand that, yes, at times you need to try things differently if you see you're not getting to where you want to be, but I think as long as I keep creating and branching out and experimenting with different things, then I'm gonna be happy doing what I'm doing. But I think for the most part I've definitely struggled in some way, in the sense of like just trying to make sure that I'm financially stable, you know, not selling for 9 to 5. I think even recently I told my friends I'm going to start looking for jobs doing XYZ and that weren't related to art, because I'm tired of just like
struggling.
You know, I have one client through Upwork, for freelance website that I recommend all like freelance artists use. It's called Upwork. And, I've been doing that for a few months, and I had one consistent client who I was working probably like 20 hours a week with her, but and it's all, you know, I draw and then I create digital files for her and then send it to her, and that was cool. But then she kind of stopped, and then I was like, oh fuck, what do I do? So, and then that's when I decided, okay, I'm gonna do doodles, like ask people if they want to doodle, and then that
like on Instagram.
Yeah, on Instagram. So that was successful, and I just finished the last one today. But I'm always constantly finding new ways. I think I do a lot of research. I do a lot of like, I literally stalk artists who I think are quote unquote successful, mostly women and men, because I'm like, fuck it, like I'm trying to learn from everyone.
Yeah.
So I literally like research so much and Google so much and just constantly feed my mind with information. But then I think at some point I'm like, okay, you've researched all this, now it's time to just put work in. You know, have all this knowledge, now use it. Because I know at times I can get caught up in research, and then not executing anything because I'm like scared. So I think now I'm at a point where I have like a list of different brands and people, organizations and stuff I want to reach out to, different art directors, etc., just so either if it's to do a mural, either if it's to collaborate. And I'm still navigating that because I'm like, I'm learning everything on my own, you know. I'm like, how do I pitch, like what do I say, like if it's Nike, for example, what do I say, like, hi, I would love to do a collaborate, like, and if you're nobody, quote unquote nobody, I hate that term too, when you're a nobody, because it's like, what does that even mean?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, because of status. But I think like I'm like, again, I watch other artists and their moves and how they do it, and I tell myself like, okay, just keep working. Like, for example, my next thing I'm working on after I finish these doodles today is I'm gonna be creating a design for a sneaker brand called Finney Design, which is one of my friends who started the brand, and they were just in GQ and stuff, featured in GQ. He was at Paris Fashion Week for his brand, and so he asked me to come up with a doodle for their shoe. So I think it's the first artist collaboration he's having, so I feel really grateful for that, and I'm excited, even though I'm like, okay, what do I want to draw? So yeah, I'm going to be getting, but it's so weird because I literally manifested that. Like, I literally wrote this down, like, I want to start working for brands, I want to do more murals, and like, but sometimes I struggle with not being proud of myself or even recognizing that things are happening that I wished for, because I'm always thinking about the future, which I think I need to stop, because
it
prevents me from ever enjoying anything. But yeah, sorry if I talked
to you. Talk a little bit about how your mental health affects your art.
My mental health, I think, plays a big role in my art. I think it can go both ways. Sometimes if I'm depressed, I can't draw or create at all, period. But my mental health also allows me to create, because I feel like when I'm sad or going through things is when I have things to say or more messages in my mind. But I also think I use art as a coping mechanism. I think genuinely I feel like the hardest part is to get started on a project. So painting, for example, the mural, starting. But once I'm doing it, it's like so therapeutic. Some, obviously it's still stressful, and I think that's a common misconception. Like a lot of, I've heard some comments from people before and friends, like you're so stressed though doing it. And it's like anything's gonna be stressful, but it's like, are you enjoying majority of the time you're working on that thing? Yes, I'm stressful because I'm my worst critic, and I'm a perfectionist. But I think my mental health, for example, I feel like I've dealt with like depression in and out, at times where I like can't get out of bed. But I'm not lying, when I moved out and I started like, and I moved to Oakland, I literally would wake up every morning from out of the couch, I don't know what the fuck I'm saying, but yes, the reason why I got out of bed every morning is because of having an idea of wanting to create something. So like having an idea literally keeps me fucking going. Like I've never looked so forward to creating stuff, like or like to wake up out of bed like finishing the doodles. I'm like, yes, I have to finish a doodle. Yes, at times when I'm in a depressed state, I feel unmotivated to get started. But once I start, I'm in love with every moment of what I'm doing. So yeah, I think my mental health plays a big role, because it at times may prevent me from doing things because I, you know,
struggle with it.
But then it also allows me to express myself in a way. I think overthinking, I've always wanted to tell someone this, like overthinking I feel like is a double-edged sword, because it's like my overthinking obviously causes so many fucking issues in my life, but also because I think I overthink is how I'm able to focus on details when creating something, or how I'm supposed, like even creating a mural.
Yeah, like the flip side of overthinking is being detail oriented. Yeah, that's like the positive aspect of it, you know, because one thing you are have always been good at is like research, whether that's, you know, anything that regarding your art or just in general, like
seeing whose pictures he's liking.
But yeah, that's something that you've always been good at is research. And so I want to talk a little bit about, you know, your journey, your own mental health journey and your own journey to like self-love and all that stuff. And you were one of the main people that has been really, really supportive of my podcast. And ever since day one, you know, like we have talked about our dreams together, and that's something that I have always appreciated about our friendship, is that we can always our ideas, like, and that's what that's something that I love about you, is that we can talk about our ideas and not other people, because that is so irrelevant. And that is something that, because like you, I am a person that is really affected deeply by my surroundings in terms of the energy that people bring around me. And so I know that's something that you struggle with also, but I want you to talk a little bit about how podcasts have been a part of your journey.
Wow. Actually, I always forget about podcasts, but like, shit, like podcasts have helped me in so many fucking ways. In college, I used to listen to like podcasts that are more like This American Story or whatever, like ones that are This American Life or whatever. But then I started listening to Amanda Seales.
I love her. Small Doses.
And then I started I started listening to The Spiritual One. It's this white woman who, I don't really fuck with Foley, like she'd be saying some funny shit, but like she like will open up the what is it called, the Pinnacle, and read from, I don't know if I'm saying it right, but it's all, I open it at the perfect time, and I feel like that's just been so helpful on like my own spiritual journey, and getting closer to myself. That's all that spiritual really means, is honestly knowing yourself and getting closer to yourself. And I think people forget that. But Millennial Miha, of course. I literally, when I was traveling and I would listen to it, I felt like I had a friend with me. And I felt like the one with Dr. Cruz was like, wow, like things that I forget to think about since I'm not in the education realm anymore. And then the one with you and Jen,
the healer,
that was really powerful too. Just so many like things that I could write down, you know. But yeah, other podcasts is that one you told me about,
Unfuck Your Brain.
She is,
shout out,
that's my bitch.
Shout
She's
out.
Dope as fuck.
I love her.
Just, oh my god, like therapist in itself. I don't even need to go to therapy. Listening to that, okay, yes, we do should go to therapy aside from listening to podcasts. But listening to her when she talks about just like the psychology behind of certain things or even jealousy or anything, I'm like, it just calms me down. It's spot on. And it just helps me out so much. And she's so real and loving and yeah.
She gives you practical solutions.
Yes.
That's the thing. Practical solutions is like what I think you and I, because we're already cerebral, like we're already up here in terms of like the way we think about things. So it's like, I don't need another person to sit there and talk about like, I can analyze until I die, you know. Mm-hmm. I just need some practical tools that I can use to get me through this moment. Yeah. So like, I don't need anybody to analyze shit for me because I got that on lock. But the thing I don't have on lock is like how to get through this moment right here, right now. So, okay, next question is, I want you to talk about how you identify culturally and what is your connection to your culture?
Okay, so this is something I feel like in a weird way. I don't know what I was saying. But how I identify culturally, well, ethnicity-wise, I'm Vietnamese and Greek. My dad was born in Vietnam and migrated to the U.S. to Florida, I believe, as a teenager, and he was actually adopted during the Vietnam War, so he's unsure actually who his biological parents are. So, and he doesn't look like a quote-unquote typical Vietnamese man slash person, so it's interesting. So, because I don't look Vietnamese, and actually I feel like I'm racially ascribed as different things depending on the setting. I think with non-white people or different people of color, black folks or Latinx folks, I'm viewed as more white passing. But when I'm with white people, I've never been around a white person who said I looked white. And to me, it's always like frustrating when I've had some people, even friends, say like, well, you're white, blah, blah, but I'm like, but I also, I trust me, like, I obviously am aware, hella hyper aware of my white privilege and all that shit. But it's like, I also don't look in the mirror and view myself as a white woman because I feel like, I look at my features and I can't explain it. Sometimes I don't know what I feel like. I'm like, my Vietnamese side didn't fully accept me growing up. My white side, my family accepted us, but we never even discussed race, the topic of race, as most white families don't. But there was very much Greek cultures. We went to Greek festivals, you know, so there's still a heavy Greek culture, even though my mom's only half Greek. So yeah, I definitely want to do an ancestry, whatever, DNA thing, shit. But
when it comes to, yeah, I hear you. And the reason why I wanted to talk about that on this podcast is because something that we can relate on is being mixed, you know, being biracial. Mm-hmm. And that is this, it's its own category. Because, you know, while I might not be able to relate to being Greek and Vietnamese, I can relate to having two cultures and feeling like you don't belong on either side. And that is a really difficult place to be in. Like that, have you heard my poem, Borderland?
Yes.
That poem is like just me trying to articulate the struggle of what it's like to be biracial. And, you know, I feel like I always preface it by saying before I perform it that, you know, when you're not from here and you're not from there, it can often feel like you're from nowhere at all. And
that's so real.
Gloria Anzaldúa is somebody that, you know, really inspired me and inspired me to create my book the way I did, because she gave me the concept of the borderland identity of like that. You don't need, like, stop trying to fit in on either side and just realize that you can set down your roots where you're standing, which is in the middle. And so to take on both of these identities is an identity in and of itself. Like, what would you say to that?
I think that's hella true. I think that's one of the reasons why growing up, I grew up in a predominantly Vietnamese or Asian and Latinx like community.
Where did you grow up?
Temple City, for the most part. And, like, Pasadena, because I feel like... that's why that's interesting, too, you know? When people ask, like, where'd you grow up or where are you from, I feel like there's so many answers to that. But I think I was always drawn towards, like, people who either were from the same socioeconomic class as me or were racially ascribed as non-white. And I think for that reason is because I just feel like I could relate to them more. I remember the only time really thinking about like other white girls is on my soccer team. I had a few white friends, and then I used to always feel intimidated by white girls. Like growing up, I didn't feel like I could connect to them. I think they were kind of like mean to me in a weird way. But What was your question? Oh, I don't know, but I'm hungry.
You're annoying. So I mentioned that I had recently gone to the Teen Vogue Summit at Goya Studios in Hollywood, and it was really it was
the beans, Goya beans.
Not fool, not the beans.
How do you know?
Because this was some real Hollywood shit. And
okay.
So I showed up at this event, and it's interesting. I wanted to tell you the story because I have been doing these really weird things. Like, I have been doing things.
Yeah. Wait. How did you get into the summit? Or
okay, I'm gonna tell you. Okay. So I have been doing these things where, like, I will impulsively do something or make a decision, and I know that I have to do it for my future in some way, shape, or form, but I don't really know exactly what it is that I'm doing. Do you get what I'm saying?
Barely.
Barely. But yeah, so like I've been doing these weird things. So like I was on Instagram, and I'm gonna tell you exactly my thought process. So I was on Instagram and I was scrolling, and I see the advertisement for the Teen Vogue Summit, and I'm like, dope, I want to go to that, right? And then my immediate second thought was, bitch, you don't belong there. And then when I had that thought, it was like I almost had to buy the ticket, like, because I was like, it was like $60. Oh. And it was like you had there were like options that you could buy. But it was like I forced myself to buy the ticket because what I have noticed about this journey that I'm on is like if I do the things that scare me, something really, really good comes out of it. And so I want to tell you a little bit about how it went. So I got to the Vogue Summit, and I was like, what the fuck am I going to wear? Because it's like, you know, because when I was growing up, I used to read Teen Vogue. Oh, yeah. I used to read it. And I used to, like, think. Wow. And then remember The Hills or whatever, that show with, like, Laguna Beach, those girls. Yes, and then one of the girls, like, worked at Teen Vogue. Yeah. Honey, I was like, I want her life.
I always wanted to work at, like, Teen Vogue. Or I'm like, how do you do that? Like, what is that?
Yeah. Job? It seemed just so inaccessible to me. But it seemed like somewhere that I wanted to be because I always wanted to be in fashion and all that stuff. But it also just seemed like it was not for me.
Yeah.
And so there was a part of me that was like, you know, inner child Angie is like, yeah, I want to be where the Teen Vogue stuff is, you know, like I wanted to be where that was. But then my other side of me, whatever that is, was like, bitch, you don't belong there. And then once I had that thought, it was like a momentary I had to force myself to purchase the ticket because I felt that I didn't belong there. And it was like me proving to myself that not only do I belong there, I can be wherever anybody is because I got the money to buy the fucking ticket. So that if my money is just as green as everybody else's. So like I went there knowing that it was going to probably be outside my comfort zone, but also kind of just excited for what could happen or who I might talk to or what might happen or what might inspire me. But I walked in there, and my first, you know, experience was I walked in, and I walked in late because I'm always late, and I was like, they were like, yeah, you can come in at 8:30. I was like, I'll be there at noon. So, because the panels didn't start till like 1 or something. And so I went alone because I have all these excuses in my head about what I can do, and I always make excuses of like, well, no one's going to go with me. Like, bitch, okay, nobody was born with you either. Nobody's going to die with you either. Like, I'm trying to challenge myself to do these things that scare me.
I would have gone.
Well, you weren't here.
I was.
You were here?
Yes.
Okay, well, anyways, this is about me, honey. This is about my journey of being doing shit alone.
Journey.
So, but yeah, that's part of it, too, is, like, doing things alone is, like, really hard for me.
But, you know, it's so weird. I think that's funny that you say that. I purposely make myself like go to art galleries alone because I feel like I'm more fearless alone.
Yeah.
And it forces you to be uncomfortable to make combo with people. Whereas if you're comfortable with a friend, you might not meet someone that you otherwise would have met.
Yeah. So I, you know, that's whole taking yourself out of your comfort zone thing. And so I walked in and I was like, they gave me the schedule and I was like, can you explain like what's going on right now? And she's like, oh, well, it's on the schedule. And that kind of turned me off a little bit because I was like, oh, okay, but I still asked, like, whatever. So I walked in, I'm like, okay, thanks. So I take the schedule and then I like walk in, and it's so Teen Vogue-y. Like, it's like everything is fashion-y and like everything's all like, it looks very Hollywood. And I was like, god damn, like maybe I should have wore something else. Like, you know, I started to feel uncomfortable immediately. And so I started looking around at everything and what everybody else was wearing, and I started doing that thing we do, you know, that compare and despair. And then it was like interesting because it was like everything like fell away, and then I just saw someone in front of me and I just focused on her face and I'm like, that's Aida Rodriguez, and that's a comedian. She just recently had a Netflix special, and I actually got to go and see the Netflix special being taped. And so it was like in this sea of like unfamiliarity, there was this person that I really just clung to, kind of like in the Dr. Cruz episode where I was telling you know, him about how there was these identifiers, and for her it was just like her brown skin, and it was like the only person that I could see that was like me in the setting. There were a lot of black women there, and that's dope, but it was, for me, when I saw her, it was like I felt a little bit more just comfortable. Mm-hmm. And so I walked right up to her, which was really interesting because I am very shy when it comes to stuff like that. But she just seemed so approachable. So I walked straight up to her and I was like, "Hi, Aida." And it was such a genuine moment because I was just like, "Hi, Aida." She didn't know who I was, but she like smiled back. She's like, "Hi." And I was like, "I'm Angie. Like, I follow you on Instagram." And I got to, you know, I was there the night you did your special, like in wherever it was. And she's like, "Oh my God, really?" And then we started talking, and she's like, "So what do you do? Like, are you a designer? What are you doing here?" And I started telling her, and she's like, "Yeah, you know," she seemed a little bothered by something. And then so she just like said it to me. She's like, "You know, I talked to this lady over here, and I don't see any brown women on the like on the stage, like on the speaker list." And I was like, "Really?" And she's like, "Yeah." I was like, "Oh, so you're not here to speak?" And I thought she was there to speak. She's like, "No, they just invited me for like just to be here," I guess. And I was like, "Oh, that's interesting. Like, you would be great to speak, like, you know." And then I started telling, she's like, "Well, what do you do?" And I told her, I was like, "Yeah, when I first walked in, and she's like, "Yeah, that sucks. That's really shitty." She introduced me to her, like, her manager. And then she was like, so then I started telling her what I do. I have a podcast, and, you know, like, and then I was wearing my Mija Making Move shirt.
Oh, cool.
So I was like, "Yeah," and then I make these shirts. And she's like, "That's dope." And I was like, "Well, lucky for you, I have one in my backpack," because I brought it just thinking, like, who am I gonna meet? Yeah. I don't know, you know. So I gave it to her. She's like, "Yeah, I would love to have one." And I gave her that, and I gave her a sticker. She's like, "I'm gonna post this for real." And so then that was the little moment I needed to feel really energized.
Like, you belonged there.
Yeah. And it was, that's exactly how I felt. Mm. And so I like posted this thing that was like, I was like, "Can we take a picture?" She's like, "Of course." So I took a picture with her, and then I posted it, and it was like me kind of putting down roots somewhere. Like, it just felt like, okay, well, you know what, I'm here for business. Like, I'm not here to fit in with people. Yeah. Like, I don't want to fit in with this world. I want to be invited to these parties, but that doesn't mean I have to become of this world, you know. And so I have to start somewhere. And so I told her, I was like, "You know, I'm really taking my whole business thing serious, and I'm trying on purpose to make myself uncomfortable. That's why I came here." And she's like, "You know what, that's dope." And so I gave her a shirt, and then I told her I have a book, and she was just really encouraging and nice. And she was like, "You know what, don't stop." And she just said some other encouraging shit, and then I like walked away. But it was like this moment that was really, really necessary in the moment where I was at. And so I wanted to share that with you because I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, as an artist, you're gonna find yourself, and I'm sure you have found yourself, in these spaces where you feel uncomfortable. And how do you plan to navigate that, or do you have a plan with that, or do you have any advice for, you know, people who enter into these spaces that are really intimidating?
Well, thank you for sharing that. Number one, I definitely have felt like I don't belong in many spaces, especially in the art world, especially in LA, because people just like, I'm like, y'all be acting bougie when you're in an art area. Like, what art isn't supposed to be bougie?
Tell the story about when we went to that.
Oh, Jeffrey Deitch. I don't even know how to pronounce his damn last name. But anyways, Jeffrey Deitch's gallery, who is like, I think he used to be the director of, I don't know where, Hammer, maybe, I don't know. Anyways, I only went because of the curator who put on the show. But I walked in, it felt very like the energy was just not the most genuine energy or comforting or welcoming. And I think as an emerging artist, I'm always trying to figure out ways of, how do I get my art in galleries, you know, like that shit seems so inaccessible at times. So I always want to, like, and you're supposed to like build a relationship with the gallery owner, you know, since they're the one in charge of who the fuck shows their art there. But I don't even know how to make conversation with someone who's an older white man, because I don't feel like there's anything we can relate to. And now in retrospect, I'm like, yeah, we can relate to each other by talking about art, but I think that's still a struggle. But I think
remember I made you make those,
oh my god. And then Angela's like, write your number down, nah, and you're gonna hand this to him. And I'm like, I'm not. And like, we stayed in there for an extra 30 minutes because I was just like hiding,
and then I went up and talked to him, remember?
Yeah. And I'm literally like a child. And then Angela's like, well, I'm gonna go talk. And I'm like, fuck. And now I was thinking about that earlier today. I'm like, what an idiot did I look like giving them my website, or like, I whatever, who gives a fuck? Like, there's no rules to this shit, and we're all gonna die eventually, so why have fear? But literally, I don't know. I, like, you asked for my advice. I think it's hard because I was actually working with Rick Ogins, who is a 75-year-old artist who has his art in the permanent like gallery at LACMA. His wife used to be the director at the Getty Museum, and he has a had an art studio in Oakland. And he's an older white man, but as I walked by, I felt like I could relate to him in some way. His studio was welcoming, so that's why I reached out to him, and I became his assistant while working out there, while living out there. And I think it's just like, you don't have to fake the funk and get along with every person in whatever industry you're working in terms of like people who have the power in the realm that you are trying to enter into. Like, fuck with the people and build connection with the people who you can somewhat relate to. So energy never lies. So I'm happy I actually didn't force to talk to that guy that day, because it didn't feel 1,000% genuine, even though I know it's sometimes in my head. But I would say just find the people in that industry or in that world that you're part of that you can somehow relate to, or you just feel a natural like energy pull towards them.
Yeah, I think that day when we were at that gallery, it's so interesting to me how I was like, when it came to advocating for you, I was ruthless, because it's so interesting how I almost believed in you more than I believed in myself, because I can do that shit for myself. Like, if Tiffany is like questioning whether or not she should go up to this man or, you know, ask about whether or not her art can be in this gallery, I'm like looking around at these other paintings. I was like, this ain't shit compared to Tiffany's work. Like, not only does she belong in this artist, like in this gallery, like she would rule the whole place. Like, your shit would, I don't know, it would just make it better. And so it's like, for me, when I was there and I was able to or I had the opportunity to advocate for you, I turned into a different person, and I just wish that I could be that person for myself, because I like go into this library all the time, like where I live, and I have wanted to ask so many times how I can get my book in the library, but I walk out every time. I'm like, I'll ask next time. I'll ask next time. I'll ask next time.
You've never asked?
I've never asked.
Oh my God. That reminds me so much of me, bro. Like, little shit like that. And then you just never do it. And it's like, but yeah, take me to there with you and I'll do it. I have so much confidence when it comes to shit that's not me too. Like, I can't explain. It's so weird. But then when it comes to yourself, like, the little voices in your head, you know, self-doubt plays with us. But excuse me, go in there and ask. And same with like Barnes and Noble, how do you get your book in there? What do you have to do?
All you have to do is just go talk to the fucking people, but I can't do it.
But like the people working there or someone, I don't know. See, shit like that sometimes seems so confusing.
So in that, we'll end with that note, but I want you to formulate some words of wisdom for a little 14-year-old mixed girl who is listening to this right now, who wants to be an artist but isn't quite sure how to get her art from her sketchbook onto a wall somewhere. Can you give her a little bit of wisdom and guidance?
Ask questions, reach out to people. Shit, use social media. Social media is so powerful, even though it gets such a bad rep. Like, oh, you're on it too much. It's like, well, you don't know what I'm doing on here. I'm researching, bitch.
Networking, bitch.
But no, for real, I feel like I follow so many artists, for example, on Instagram. And I've asked a few artists some questions before, you know, that had their artwork shown in really big galleries in the U.S. And I think just a lot of people like helping people. Some people don't, because they're just
assholes,
jaded and bougie and disconnected from real life. But that's their issue, not yours. So, literally ask questions. Like, people don't know your face, so if you're asking over online, you're emailing someone, like, there's no harm. And sometimes, yes, you're gonna get a million and one no's, but all that it takes is one yes. Like, literally one yes. Asking if you want to reach out to a business to do a mural, if you want to connect with the brand to collaborate with them, if you want to create a mural for a brand or etc., whatever it is, you just literally have to ask. Put yourself out there, or else no, like, people always say, like, work hard, like, or work hard and be patient, you know, but it's, like, nah, like, but you have to do the work. You have to, like, take a risk and put yourself out there. Shit's not going to come to you, and I think that's a common misconception I used to have, is that shit will come to you, you know? You're doing the work, so it'll come to you. No, you need to
create opportunities
for yourself. Like, shit's not just going to pop up. Yes, maybe in the future if people know your name and shit, but you have to literally put yourself out there.
Yeah.
So put yourself out there.
basically, if they don't open the door, then build a tunnel, bitch. So, okay, I love you so much. Can you tell my audience where they can find you on social media and how they can contact you, your website and whatnot?
You can find me on Instagram at TYFFFANI. You can find me on my website and my artwork at TIFFNGUYEN.com. And yeah.
Love you.
Love you. Thank you for having me so much.
If you would like to support this podcast, you can rate it, review it, or subscribe. And to keep up with me daily, follow me on Instagram at Millennial Miha. If you feel moved to pay it forward, you can always hit my Venmo at Millennial Miha. And for bookings, visit me at, yes, you guessed it, millennialmiha.com.